The natural state of the human mind is wise and helpful. And this is something that is known, but it is not widely known. Through the Great Freedom Teaching, it's becoming more widely known that the natural state of the human mind is wise and helpful. Most of us learn to be at war with our mind, constantly trying to do something about what appears within it. And those things that we attempt to do about what appears within the mind are very simply categorized. One, we either indulge the thoughts and emotions that appear within the mind. We avoid them, so we try to put together some kind of strategy for avoiding the ones that are painful so that they won't be as painful. And another approach we might take is to replace thoughts and emotions that we have in our mind with what we think are better thoughts and emotions, such as, I'm facing a supremely evil person, as in your question, Xiao, and what I can do in this situation is either rant and rave about how supremely evil they are, or replace that kind of thinking and maybe the emotion of fear that might be present too when facing someone like that in a direct encounter. I can practice compassion. I can see the person as myself or other such strategies. And then the fourth approach is to rest the mind completely. In other words, with no need to add or subtract anything. No need to add in any new thoughts and no need to subtract any thoughts or emotions. And it's in that resting of the mind completely, no matter what kind of situation we're in, that we discover, we find the treasure trove of the wise and helpful mind. It's only in resting the mind completely that we find the wise and helpful treasure trove of the mind. The wise and helpful treasure trove of the mind can never be found by adding and subtracting thoughts and emotions. All the thoughts and emotions that appear within the mind are energy appearances, dynamic energy appearances of that mind. So they're self appearances of that mind. The labels that are given to them are just conventional descriptions. But if we wanted to get down to the basic reality of what these thoughts and emotions are, we'd have to say they're energy patterns of the mind in their pure form and nothing else, and that these energy patterns are just energy patterns. In other words, they're all equal in being energy patterns of the mind. And the kind of information contained in the descriptions and labels we give them are very limited. If we don't know that their most fundamental nature is that they are mind alone, they are the awareness by which we know the mind alone. So the mind too, that's just another thought. That's just another an emotion, just another viewpoint. It's what we could say is that the term points of view or the term viewpoint, that these terms are synonymous with thoughts, emotions, and experiences. We could just call them all viewpoints within the all-encompassing view of awareness. So the mind is a viewpoint within the all-encompassing viewpoint of awareness. Getting rid of thoughts and emotions and replacing them with better ones is a viewpoint within awareness, and avoiding thoughts and emotions, that's another viewpoint within awareness. Indulging thoughts, emotions, experiences, that's another viewpoint within awareness. And if we don't know that, well, then some of our impulses to act based on thoughts and emotions might be good and they might not be good. In other words, they might be beneficial to us and they may not be beneficial. But what we can guarantee is that we'll constantly be ricocheting back and forth between what's right and wrong, what to accept and what to reject. When in the natural resting presence of the mind, it becomes clear just in that resting presence of the mind alone what to do and how to act without relying on any labels of what appears. The labels just go on however they do, but there's complete freedom in the immediate perception of those thoughts and emotions, of those viewpoints, of those labels and descriptions. There's complete freedom in the immediacy of perception of whatever those viewpoints are. So if there's anger, there's complete freedom in the immediacy of that perception. If there's fear, there's complete freedom in the immediacy of that perception. If there's joy, there's complete freedom in the immediacy of that perception. If there's happiness, there's complete freedom in the immediacy of that perception. In other words, there's no clinging to any perception as being a source of satisfaction and fulfillment. It's known through the vital knowledge that is the resting presence of the mind, that the resting mind alone is the greatest source of fulfillment and satisfaction. And it's in that alone that we can truly be assured that any faults we have may be exhausted and qualities perfected without doing anything. So when we realize that there's nothing that needs to be done about the thoughts and emotions that appear in the mind, that all of these thoughts and emotions don't have an independent nature, they're the dynamic energy of mind alone. When we realize that and we rest the mind completely, no matter what appears, no matter what situation we're in, what we find within ourselves is the most natural of resources, the naturally occurring wise and helpful mind that's always completely at ease and doesn't need to have any intellectual assessments of anything in order to be. It's happy simply to be as it is, which is at rest. The mind's always at rest. The mind we were born with was a mind at rest, and the mind every second, all the time we've lived our lives, the ground of the mind is completely at rest, completely at ease. Just because we may have never known that doesn't mean that it isn't true. It's just that we've never known that. However, if we meet a supremely evil person, which is something that not many of us will ever do. You know, it's very rare that anyone would ever meet a supremely evil person. But sometimes we do. Sometimes we all of a sudden are in a situation where we're faced with a person who is scary, really scary. And then when we are in a situation like that, we can be faced with all kinds of thoughts and emotions. One of them might be, oh, we're so scared, we're so frightened, we just automatically become catatonic, you know. Maybe we can't get away from the person and we're caught there, trapped with them. And Then the other thing we might do is just avoid what we're feeling. We can't bear what we're feeling, so we're just going to steel ourselves and avoid it and just be like a robot going through this experience of being faced with this person who's way outside the conventional framework of what it means to be human. And then the third thing we might do is just try with all our might to replace the fear and the scary feelings we're having and the scary thoughts with other thoughts. So we're going to replace them with compassionate thoughts for this person we're facing, or we're going to devise some kind of strategy to somehow find a way out of this scary situation we're in. Now, every day, people all over the world are in situations like this with other people. So the commonality is that the people involved are all human beings. And then the fourth approach that can be taken is just to rest the mind completely. No matter what appears, there might be scary thoughts that appear, fearful thoughts. There might be thoughts of, shutting down and just trying to get away from what we're thinking and feeling. Or there might be thoughts of trying to replace what we're thinking and feeling with other better thoughts that will make us a good person to think those thoughts, like trying to be compassionate and engage the person as though they're another human being rather than a scary, frightening, almost monster type human being. However, in that situation, the greatest likelihood we have of being able to be completely at ease is to rest the mind completely. No matter what appears. One instant it might be a scary thought, another just a horrible thought of what could happen to us. The next we could be trying to have a compassionate thought about the person. The next we could just be indulging our fear and emotions completely. But when we're resting the mind completely, all these thoughts, no matter what they are, they come and go. They are like the flight path of a bird in the sky, like a line drawn in water. They disappear naturally of their own accord without anything needing to be done about them. In other words, they don't need to be acted on. The thoughts and emotions do not need to be acted on. They don't have an independent nature. They've never been substantial in their own right, so they have no information to act upon. If we live our life acting upon our thoughts and emotions, then we have a very limited life and we don't really have any access to our wise and helpful mind that's always at ease. But when we rest the mind completely, then we can get in touch with something about ourselves that we never knew was there. And that is the wise and helpful mind that's always present. So it doesn't need to be trained or forced into being. It's already present, but we only know it's already present when we rest the mind completely. And what that means is that any thought or emotion can and will appear. There's no way to predict what thoughts and emotions will appear. There's no way whatsoever to predict that. And even if we can predict it a little bit, we'll only be able to predict it a little bit. But what we can guarantee is that no matter what thought and emotion appears, the basis of the mind, the ground of the mind, is always completely at ease. And in that complete ease of mind, we have our greatest power and force to take care of ourselves and be all right in the world. Now, I've known people who have actually been in situations like this, you know, where they did rest the mind completely and then they were able to know what to do and how to act in a very powerful way of outwitting their captor. Because, see, a person who's bent on a course of action, what you call a supremely evil person or a person who is very disturbed, maybe they're deranged and confused, they're totally wrapped up in indulging their points of view. So they're not avoiding them or trying to replace them with other points of view. They're totally wrapped up in indulging their viewpoints, whatever they are. That for some reason they feel overwhelmed with the impulse to hurt someone else, to maybe even torture them in some way, and to unrelentingly do so, and maybe even murder them. You know, maybe that's their goal. We know that there are people like this everywhere, all over the world. There aren't many of them, thankfully, but there are some. And then, you know, sometimes too we see that this takes the form of a group. So sometimes groups of people decide to hurt groups of other people. So we see this played out as war. But in either of these cases, there's an obsessive quality to indulging certain viewpoints and seeing that as the only solution for coming to terms with whatever it is that's going on. So we see this all the time, and we even have books and movies that are fictitious about this topic. And in this case, what we have are authors who have confused and deranged viewpoints, who are putting them into books and movies. And then, whereas this will seldom be the case, other people who are confused and deranged see these movies or read these books, and then they decide that this is some kind of a message that they should act out these things that they're reading about or seeing. So you see, if we don't know that the purpose of our human mind is to discover the wise and helpful mind, the purpose of the human mind is to benefit ourselves and benefit others, then we can end up doing all kinds of things without ever even knowing why we're doing them, like writing about things that are confused and deranged that someone else may copy just from reading it. Maybe most of the people who read the book will just see it as a fantasy, as a fiction, but there might be just those few who don't see it as that. They might see it as a message that they're supposed to act out these things. So we know that this too happens all the time. So you see, if we take responsibility for our mind, and we know from the beginning and train our children to know that the purpose of the mind is to benefit ourselves and others, then we know this. Otherwise, we don't. And if we don't know it, then we have inner and outer conflict in our lives. Now, to rest the mind means that when a thought or emotion appears, that we just don't follow after it. That's it. That's all it means. That's all resting the mind is. We don't follow after it. And the more we don't follow after it for short moments repeated many times, the more it becomes certain and continuous. The more it becomes permanent and obvious at all times. So just as simple as that. Instead of following after all the thoughts and emotions, we just don't do that anymore. And when we don't do that anymore, we find the restful quality that's at the basis of our mind. So you see, all the strategies like indulging viewpoints, avoiding them or replacing them are just strategies. They can't provide us any support when the going gets rough. Like if we're kidnapped by a mad person or if we're on our deathbed, we don't have the mental capacity at those times if we've been living our life based on our viewpoints and if we've been completely unfamiliar with the wise and helpful mind and we don't even know that's a possibility. Then when we get into a situation like that, we won't know what to do. And it'll be, for most people, terrifying. Very terrifying, whether it's being the captive of an individual where there's just the two of you, or whether it's these group situations of terror. One group exercising terror against another group of human beings. This is called war in common parlance. And then the other group exercising terror back. So you see, this is all blatant evidence that many human beings are not aware that the purpose of the mind is to benefit oneself and others. And that the nature of the mind is that it is wise and helpful. Mm-hmm. I meet many people all over the world, and I have met many people who have been faced with what you would call, or what you did call, supreme evil, Shao. And the what we could say supreme evil is a mind that's completely out of control. The body cannot act without the impulses of the mind. So supreme evil is just a human body that's completely out of control, or a group of human bodies that are completely out of control. And waging mayhem, terror, vengeance on another human being or other human beings. But, you know, what to do? Well, we have so many examples. For example, in the concentration camps, that was an example of one group of human beings waging a campaign of terror on another. And almost all of the people who ended up in those camps and went into the gas ovens were terrified, totally terrified at what was happening to them, at what was happening to their loved ones, at the impending death that they saw moments or days away. To see piles of bodies, hills of bodies of people who had been killed in the ovens and then taken out and stacked up. To see their skin stripped and made into lampshades and other types of objects. This would be horrifying, terrifying. But there were those rare cases in the same situation where people were there and they had become familiar with their wise and helpful mind. And because they had, they were able to endure in a way that the others couldn't. And I meet people today who are going through the same things, you know, in South Africa, where there are all kinds of campaigns of terror of one group of human beings waged against another, not just South Africa, but all over the world, where people grow up knowing that if they see a wild pumpkin patch, that means their body's buried there. And where people live knowing that any moment something unspeakably violent can happen. Where people become numb to the possibility of that violence because it's so ever-present. Whether this is the Middle East, South Africa, Israel, where any moment a missile can fly into town or into a kibbutz or wherever it might be, and boom, it's all over. Never knowing, a bomb explode in the middle of town. Never knowing. So these are all examples of the mind completely out of control, of the mind that does not know itself as it is, of the mind that is wild and unrestrained in a negative way. And to some degree, we even see this in our approach to science today, where science is going through a process of development that is just for the sake of science alone and what it can produce, without the context of the question, how will this benefit beings being asked? How will this benefit the world? So where there isn't this context of how will these actions benefit, then there's a wild and crazy mind to one degree or another. I know a woman who was captured by a mad person and couldn't get away for quite a period of time, so not just a short time, but quite a period of time, and at first fought back with all her might trying to get away from the person, but then realized that wasn't going to happen, you know, because the person had weapons and the person was totally deranged and confused and, you know, terrifying, totally scary situation that was beyond anything that could ever be imagined or maybe even read about in a book. And so through resting, she was able to outwit the person. Not right away, but by resting, she saw how to outwit the person. And then she was able to get out of a situation that would have ended in certain death. So you see, in this way, she went from seeing this person as a hideous monster to seeing the person as a gift, but not in any contrived way. It all happened within her and her ability to rest her mind completely. And then from that vantage to see exactly which move to make next. So you see, the greatest power we have is in our wise and helpful mind. Not only is there the power to benefit ourselves, but there's also the power to benefit others, not in just some kind of Casper Milquetoast sort of way, but in a potent way, a completely potent way, just as in the same way that the natural order of everything is completely potent. It cannot be stopped. The natural order of everything is irrepressible. It cannot be contained. There's no way to stop the natural order of everything, just as it is. And when we tap into that, then we know that we are that. We are the natural order of everything. And then we too tap into that same immense power that orders everything, even chaos.